Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to welcome you to the Senate Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. It is Wednesday, February 5th. And welcomes back to the committee Senator Olson and Senator Courtney. And Senator Boqvist has to be in federal court today, and so that is why he is not presiding, but he should be back soon, we think. All right, with that, I'd like to open an organizational meeting for the adoption of committee rules. Senator Olson?
Chair Mona Sanderson, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 7th, 2013.
Or were they?
Madam Chair, that's a typo, and it should be today's date, February 5th. The actual model rules have the date, February 5th, 2014. Sorry for the error.
I will amend my motion. I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated today, February 5th, 2014.
Great. Senator Olson moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated today. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered, and I will close the organizational meeting, and I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1505. Madam Administrator, please describe what we have before us.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 1505 excludes a veteran's disability benefits from a calculation of spousal support. There is also an amendment we just received, and it was posted on OLIS, and there are copies available at the dais, that creates a discrimination claim that makes orders of spousal support that include a veteran's disability benefits as an abuse of discretion as a matter of law, entitling the veteran to immediate reimbursement and also making the effect of the measure retroactive. The proponent is here. It's Mr. Peter Barclay, and we'll pull up the witness sheet for anybody who's here to testify.
Mr. Barclay, please come forward.
Thank you. Honorable Senators, I really appreciate being able to participate in processes like this. I really do. And it's kind of a real treat. My name is Peter Barclay. I am a veteran and a legacy veteran at that. My father, my father's father, my father's father, my dad was real big on genealogy, traced it all the way back to the American Civil War, found out that every single one of us has all served this country. And amazingly, he didn't tell me until after I got out. I guess he didn't want to put me under pressure. I love America, and I love my fellow veterans, and I've been dealing with a bunch of different issues, both personally. I got involved in this myself, and I've seen how it is devastating on the lives of veterans on a national level. This bill right here, I'm dealing with a problem that is a national problem, but I do not want to see Oregon getting into a crux problem where we're getting crushed. One of the things I'm working on is a federal right of action to 5301, which is this portion of the law that says the benefits are not supposed to be used. This is such a crazy bill because when you look at it from the stance, you say, this makes no sense. Why would you want to be stopping to pay spousal support? That doesn't make sense. And that's because the law is code. It's computer codish, languages stuff, something that I can't even speak. I know it's supposed to be English, but it's not. When you look at the law, you find yourself falling into huge problems because of jurisdictional boundaries. Huge budgetary issues because of jurisdictional boundaries. How many times have we heard about all the problems from before that police agencies, because they were required under their jurisdiction to follow purchase processes, buying radios in different jurisdictions that couldn't communicate with each other? Same problem we're having here. The reason that you're not supposed to be using spousal support or using veteran benefits and spousal support is it's denying the ex-spouses their own benefits. It's denying them the money that they're supposed to be getting, and it's leaving them in a situation where it's doing major damage and harm. Obviously, you can't directly contribute this, but the worst case that I've had was a woman who was given an award of $500 a month, denied all access to her benefits, and then she drank herself to death living on the streets. So I've been working with veterans and ex-spouses nationwide. This is the worst time in the world for veterans. They're coming home, and a lot of them are coming home injured. You put an injury on anyone. Just civilian, normal person comes home, got hurt at work. That can destroy a family. You add that on top of somebody who has been gone for half a year, and they've grown a certain level with all of the experiences that they've had to do over that year, and you're almost guaranteeing a divorce with a rate that we've been told is now 90% for returning veterans. I've spoken with the veterans here in Oregon. I've worked with vets and ex-spouses nationwide. The discrimination that we're facing, as I see it and as I see throughout the United States, and I've gained support by a number of different groups, and I'm very careful about some of the groups I work with, because when I work with parent groups, I make sure I'm dealing with parent groups that are equally working both sides of the picture. You deal with divorce, it's ugly. Everybody wants to fight, and the only way they think they can win is by beating up the other person. And that's not what's supposed to happen here. We're supposed to be saying, you need this, you need this, you just can't do it together, and let's deal with the situation. They can't do it because they're in too much pain. And I got to tell you, I've been through divorce. It'll drive you nuts. It just does. And they can't deal with it. But you have to be able to take a calm head and look at it for them on the outside. When you're looking at veteran benefits, you have to look at them as federal benefits. Not just veteran benefits, they're federal benefits. They're taxpayer monies that we're paying to the federal government to go into these programs to pay for federal benefit programs. Doesn't matter if you're talking about HUD, education grants, veteran benefits, SNAPs, doesn't matter what it is, you're talking about federal benefit programs. And when you talk about federal benefit programs, you're talking about systems that are designed based on an eligibility system. And when you talk about eligibility, you say, okay, are you eligible for this? These are not guaranteed. They're not earned. They're not remuneration for employment. You don't earn these. As a matter of fact, as a veteran, and I said this before in front of you about 2 years ago at the meeting when I was talking about issues like this, is I said, we don't have the Bill of Rights. It was written to protect the public from us, okay? Our Bill of Rights, we have rights, but they're under 10 and 32, or 38, excuse me. And I'm sure Senator Boquist, if he was here, he could tell you that even as a retiree, after you get out, you are not out from underneath the thumb of being a soldier or being a service member. Let me ask you something. Have you ever seen AT&T, Sprint, Microsoft, any company that somebody retires from, and you tell them, hey, I need you to come back and work for me, and you have to? Ever seen them do that? I think we know what we're talking about here. They've gone through it. We are under a lifelong commitment. Once a soldier, always a soldier, is a legal statement talking about the legal separation you do. You raise your hand and you say, I am willing to give up everything, including my life. It's a blank check to my government. I'm going to start by handing you my Bill of Rights. It's the document that protects our rights. Doesn't mean that it's our rights. It protects them. And we sacrifice that and we take up 8, 10, and 38. And when you're in the military, it's highly restrictive. The Army, over the last 10 years, on average, discharges over 10,000 soldiers. That's just the Army, not Air Force, Marines, Navy, Army. 10,000 soldiers every year because they couldn't hack the honorable status required. And it's an honorable status, and I talk to people about that a lot because you hold an honorable status as senators. Our judges hold honorable statuses. We call them Your Honor because on a daily basis they have to literally remember to sacrifice a lot of their civil liberties, and that's what it is. It's the civil liberties and the sacrifice of that. You're speaking for a group of people where you have to sacrifice potentially your own voice to say, I am going to respect everybody in my constituency to do this, and that's what that is. And so as soldiers, we have to earn that honorable status to get back our rights under 38. Has it, ever been to the mall and seen soldiers walking around and see any of them carrying guns, buying a gun? We don't have the right to bear arms in the way that you do. We're told when we can carry and when we can't. And most of the time, you have to get permission from your commander, store it in the armory on base, registered, as well as forensics registered. Can you imagine the civilians in the NRA hearing about that? If you tried to do that to civilians, they'd go nuts. But for military, it's what we give up in order to provide the protections that we have to. And we have to make sure that the military is not capable of doing a coup. But that at the same time, because we sacrifice so much, we need protections. We get PCS'd all over the place, all the time. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. We're allowed to break a lease. We get deployed. If you're reserves and you get called back to duty, you have to get your job back. Last year, I was working on a new piece of protections for veterans that didn't exist. This bill is for protections that already exists at the federal level. In the NDAA, under Section 555, I was able to help with the work, tremendous support and work of both the National Parents Organization, DAV, Congressman Turner, all kinds of groups like Soldier Hard, musician, Boone Cutler, huge advocate for soldiers and their rights, working on these things and getting in, and try this out for size, custody rights for soldiers regarding deployment. You can get back your job, but you can't get back your kid. Yes, putting custody pieces into the federal law. Everything about a soldier is federally owned. They can dictate the color of our underwear, okay? Everything, as long as it's talking about a 401k civilian issue? No. Anything. As soon as it becomes related to military or veteran status, that's federal. It's owned there. during the government shutdown, how many times have I heard somebody loudmouth screaming, let's impeach all the senators, let's recall all of the House members or these people, whichever side they didn't like? And you just look at them and you go, you haven't read the Constitution, have you? You can't do that. That's not how authority works. You can't do that. We don't have that control. It goes top down. And it's the same way for our soldiers. Because every single piece of our life as soldiers is outlined by federal law, they control all of that and they hold the authority over this. And it's not always been a great deal. The VA's not always done a great job. And I've been working on things like this to stop the discrimination, because it's not a matter about being equal. We are not equal to civilians. We have our Bill of Rights, they have theirs. We're not equal, but we're not better, we're not worse. We just have equal protection, where there's just not a one equals one. You can't say apple equals orange. We're both fruit. We're both good. So it's that kind of equality that we're looking for. And right now for civilians, we have veteran compensation benefits. These are not remuneration for employment. They are covered under Title 38, 511, which is a sole authoritative statement for the VA, which for some reason has been completely ignored and completely overlooked, which I spoke to you about 2 years ago, and is funny as can be. One person doesn't check the book of law to see if the case that you're referencing still exists, and next thing you know, everybody's relying on that, saying, oh, well, he did it. I don't have to double check it. Oh, they did it. I don't have to double check that. Oh, they did it. And it just keeps growing and growing and growing until everybody's basing it off case law on laws that haven't existed in over 2 decades. On the civilian side, you have payments for the loss of ability. Not the loss of a job, the loss of abilities. Veterans, veteran benefits, veteran compensation. We call it disability. Well, we call it pensions. We call it disability. We have different definitions. You can't use the same lingo. If I use the same lingo that somebody from 1820 used, it would sound crazy. We have different words for different things. Under the civilian law, disability is basically compensation for the loss of a job. You pay into Social Security disability. You pay into your disability insurance payment. You check the LES statement, it's not paid into. You go over there and you say, oh, if you're a four-star general and you've had 40 years of service and you're a E-1 private and you've only been in for 90 days and you both get disability, oh, well, he must get way much more because he's had so much time in service and he's got so much more rank. Nope, same check. It has nothing to do with rank. It has nothing to do with anything. These are just for the loss of ability. And you look at the civilian side and you say, well, what program is the closest? Because there's no equal signs. What's the closest? And it's SSI. Given for the loss of ability. And I started looking at that, and I had some veterans look at me, and these are the kind of comments I get. And I go, you walk into court and they will respect the exclusion at the federal level for SSI. And they don't respect the exclusion for veteran compensation. So if you were born with Tourette's and you're stereotyped as always blurting out obscenities and always stereotyped as having angry outbursts, but you won't use that person's SSI payment because it has an eligibility requirement for being disabled, but you still won't use it in a spousal support award because it's for them, but you will for a soldier because they have PTSD. And they're stereotyped for angry outbursts, and they're stereotyped for this and that and the other, and we're going to do that. And they forget to look at the fact that when you're looking at federal benefit programs, regardless of which bucket they're coming out of, whichever jurisdictional bucket it's coming out of, it's based on eligibility. And when the divorce happens, the benefits for the veteran are reduced. They go down. Well, that just means that she's transferring from this bucket into her own. She's going to be eligible. You're already talking about people on the lowest level of the rung who have not been able to do things. They've been surviving on what they can. It just means that she's transferring to a different jurisdictional bucket. And you're not going to sit there and help these people by splitting what's left. You're going to help these people by saying, you can go over here and apply for your benefits and you can get yours. I cannot tell you how many people have been denied benefits because they converted, legally converted, non-remuneration for employment, specifically in the law, not remuneration for employment, not income, non-taxable. Not usable in this benefit program, such as Social Security. You can't use it in Social Security disability as income. It's very quantifiable as why it's treated the way it is. But all of a sudden, it's being converted into an spousal support income. Taxable, meaning more of that money's leaving the state again and heading out. And it's taxable. And on top of that, it's now income. And when that spouse walks over and says, I've been given $1,000, which is not enough to cover my needs, and I need help, they say, I'm sorry, but you're disqualified from my program because they're not non-taxable, non-usable benefits for veterans. I will tell you there is an issue on child support, and I'm sure if the Child Support Department came up here, I would actually love to speak with you because this needs to be hashed out for children, but it's a lot more complex and it's a lot more difficult to deal with. And it's because children are still dependents and we need to make sure that we're using the process because if we use the correct legal process, the apportionment process, we get benefits to the kids faster, we get them to them on time, we get them monthly, we even get more benefits than we're used to getting for these kids. Whereas right now, we're fighting over the benefits to get the veteran to pay when the veteran is actually technically under the federal law ordered not to because of the anti-corruption laws. And when you look at it, you go, oh, you mean we were supposed to do this? I've worked with so many other states, California, they don't use it in their child support. They don't use it in spousal support. I've worked with them to make sure that both the kids are getting their apportionment, their portion, sent separately to the child. I can't do that all in one bill. We've got to do baby steps. So we're just doing this one right now for just the spousal. And I would love to talk to you all day about this, but I'm sure you guys are backed up with time. So I am going to actually just cut the rest of this off. But I want to leave you with two stories. basically, two cases that I personally have been involved in. I worked hard for these ladies. Okay? The first was given an award of spousal support, $1,000. The veteran benefit was this much, and it was reduced because a spouse doesn't exist anymore. That's eligibility. You're divorced, that's a legal separation of a spouse. Benefit went down. They then cut that benefit and gave her $1,000 of it, leaving the veteran with a portion of it, and leaving her with a portion. This woman has received $1,000 whenever possible, and she has testified in court on a number of times that she is living in squalor. Her apartment is mold infested. It is terrible for her. She's living in hardship. Gone back. She's testified and said, I was disqualified because of my spousal support income from SSI, HUD, food stamps. I think she said she was only able to get $20 of food stamps. I personally worked with this woman before the divorce. Before the divorce, I walked her into the SSI office, sat with her during the interview. I applied her through the VA, through all of the different programs that are out there, through the educational benefit system. I got her a $1,000 a month stipend, grants to pay for all of the tuition and fees and everything. These were approved. The SSI and the other two were all on hold. It takes about 45 days for them to go through. The award for support came through. $1,000. Everything rescinded. Everything denied. The woman is still complaining that she's living in squalor today. I have another woman. I love this case. This is my pet favorite when you want to talk and brag about people who do what's right and they do it, and it's like the average person who can become the greatest. They didn't have to do awesome and get great grades and do all these good things. This woman received no award for support. I took her down, got her into the benefit programs, got her into the educational grant programs. Okay? And remember, this is our federal tax dollars. Every time we pay our federal taxes, when you pay federal taxes, they go up there. You're paying them. Do you get a rebate whenever somebody gets disqualified from a program? Do they send you a check and say, I'm sorry, here's your money back? You didn't have to pay that because we disqualified so-and-so? No, it means all that money not coming back into our economy. It's not going into our colleges. Remember, that woman didn't go to college. This woman is right now today, I got an email, she's in an interview. She doesn't graduate until June. She's in an interview for a law enforcement agency because she studied in criminal justice. And they're already excited about trying to get her. She's got interviews. This was a woman who got her programs and her benefits, approximately $1,900. She got $1,000 a month in travel costs and other pieces for school on a grant that goes on top of the other. On top of that, it paid for the tuition, the fees, all that, the Pell Grant, all those good programs that are out there right now, all those federal funds coming in. That was $19,200, and this is just a rough estimate from working on her case, in a year, just for the benefits for her to take care of herself. That was the base benefits, food stamps, things like that. The school grant funds was $17,730 on an annual basis, being paid to the schools. Federal tax funds coming back here. For the 4 years that she went to college, that was $150,000, just over $150,000 of our tax dollars that didn't get stuck in D.C. and came back here that we got to use. And you know what we got out of it? We got a woman who is, in my opinion, an amazing, not just highly educated, not just skilled, but an asset to our community. The job she's applying for today is $40,000 a year. And she's got others that she's got to look at first. She's got opportunity on her fingertips. We have a veteran who is having to sacrifice that money to take care of the other woman, and you're dealing with people who are both complaining that they don't have enough to take care of themselves because the benefits were for one person were split. I think it's pretty simple here. Or do you want to try to ask Washington for a refund?
Thank you, Mr. Barclay. Appreciate it. And thank you for bringing this forward. I think it is a very complex issue. And benefits is extremely important to our society, in my view, and we do want it to be fair. So I appreciate it very much for you bringing this forward. I think we just have one more person to testify, Ellen Mendoza from the Department of Justice.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. I have previously submitted...
Just introduce yourself and make it legal.
Ellen Mendoza, Division of Child Support, Department of Justice. I'm the policy manager for the Division of Child Support. I have, previously submitted written comments to the committee, and we just want those to be part of the record. We are neutral on this bill. The comments in the written testimony concern the future effects of the bill down the road in terms of child support. But for this bill, we are neutral, and we would stand on our written testimony.
All right. Thank you. So that is noted for the record.
I'd like to ask a question.
Yes, please.
So I'm going to be very careful how I proceed here. I don't want anybody to read into anything. These documents, I don't want to be disrespectful. I speak only for myself, not Representative Olson, Representative Monsanderson, or Representative Bogus. I can't understand any of the documents. I'm sorry. They're written in ways that just they don't make sense to me. So I want to ask very simple questions. A man and woman get together, they have children. They're veterans. There's a divorce. Is there a federal law, let's just start, that says that a part of deciding the child support payment, disability payments, just disability payments, just child support, I'm not into spousal support, those disability payments are to be made part of how much the veteran should pay in child support? Is there a federal law that requires that?
No. There is, our current state law allows disability payments to be considered as part of the income available to that parent.
Okay.
And so we use that as part of their income.
Right.
And then if veteran payments are going to the child through the Veterans Department, we figure out a child support amount and reduce it dollar for dollar based on the amount of payments.
What I want to know.
Don't go there. Okay.
Is either you say there's not a federal law, but there is a state law that says if a veteran is receiving disability payments, that will be considered in child support payments. How much goes in child support? Is that correct?
It will be considered as part of the income.
And this bill attempts to say no to that?
This bill only addresses spousal support. What can be considered income in determining spousal support?
Okay, not child support.
Right.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I really appreciate that clarification.
And
that is not evident. I don't mean to be disrespectful. I guess you people know all this. This simplicity, this stuff needs to be made very simple for me to even begin to understand because I don't have their intelligence or their sophistication of knowledge. That is really helpful. So let's get the record straight for Peter Michael Coleman Corley only. We're talking spousal support. We're not talking child support.
This bill is only with regards to spouses.
Because I have some strong feelings on child support. All right.
And my comments were just received today, and I know there's a number of other pieces of paper
I want to get into the complication language and everything else. You have just said, not trying to trap you, that the way I just phrase it is accurate. A disability payment given to a veteran can be considered, and will be considered in what that veteran pays in child support. That is law. That is not affected by this bill. This bill affects a man and woman who are not getting along and dissolve the marriage.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I want to also cite for the record that there is testimony from the Oregon State Bar that's in OLIS as well as I got a hard copy. And then also Ralph DeBoer sent testimony. He was sorry that he could not be here due to weather, but he also sent testimony in favor of the bill. Okay. Seeing, looks like there's no further discussion. Any comments? Questions? All right. I will thank you, Mr. Barclay, for bringing this forward. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1505. And, Madam Administrator, are we finished for the day then?
It's all the committee's business. You may adjourn.
Okay, then we are adjourned.